question that we're going to look at today is the question of what is the purpose of the Egyptian exile. The whole Pesach rides on the fact that we were there and that we left. But I want to go back and ask that question of, well, why did we need to be in Egypt? Or why did we need to be in exile in general? And what was the purpose of the slavery, the attempted extermination of the people? What was trying to accomplish this? Why did God allow this to happen to the B'nai Israel? And what are the lessons to be learned from the Egyptian exile towards future exiles as well? Now, if you look at the source that does not have a number on it, because I added it in after the night, sorry, I forgot to even put a title on.
Zero.
You will notice the Gemara in Yoma. The Gemara in Yoma is a very famous Gemara that says, Mikdash Rishon Mipnei Machorav. You all know this. Why was the first Beit HaMikdash destroyed? Mipnei Shlosha Devarim Shehayubo Avodah Zarah Gilu Ariot V'Shvichut Damim. Now, what I'm trying to show you with that is that we know very clearly why the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and why Jews went into exile. Gemara tells you, you all know that. But we don't have that very same information when it comes to the going down to Egypt and the slavery in Egypt. Okay, so we're going to get to that to be one of the answers. We'll see that slowly. Let's build it up. But I also want you to look here in source number one. Source number one is the Tanhuma, which says, if you wish to understand the meaning of exile and an explanation, look at the laws of the red heifer, the Paraduma. Just as in that instance you are unable to descend to the secret of its meaning, so with regard to the painful exile. So I suppose we're going to spend a whole hour now presenting all kinds of reasons. The important thing is to remember in the back of our head at a certain point that just the way the Para Aduma essentially is an unfathomable halacha. So here too, the Medrash is saying that so is the concept of exile. At a certain extent, we're going to be able to give certain suggestions, but our understanding is certainly limited. And what we're going to do is, each approach has its advantages, and each approach has its disadvantages. And they're not mutually exclusive. And so we're going to have to sort of create an amalgam of these various ideas. So this is one of the things I would suggest doing at your table, especially if you have adults. I would take the various ideas, put them on index cards, give them out to various adults at the table. Tell them that no matter what happens, they must defend that position. Okay? That is the position that they have to defend. And you're going to have, and you'll see that we're going to have different, and then obviously people at the table can respond and say, well, no, that's not right because this, that, and the other thing. And we'll see that we're going to, it will prove to a very enriching and fascinating discussion at your Seder table. So let's begin with the first approach. And the first approach has already been mentioned, and that is the first approach that I think is similar to this Gemara in Yoma, is one that we understand. When we talk about exile, we usually associate it with sin. Sin, exile, punishment. Whenever there's punishment, there has to be a sin, and so therefore the exile in Egypt has to be connected to sin. So then the obvious question is,
Which one?
Right. Who sinned? Right. Who sinned and what was the sin? Okay, so approach number one is punishment for sin. Now it subdivides here into who is the guilty party. So let's first look at source number three, and then we'll go back. Source number three is the Gemara in Nedarim. The Gemara Nedarim says like this, Rabbi Abahu said in Rabbi Elezer's name, why was our father Avraham punished and his children doomed to the Egyptian servitude for 210 years? So there's the answer to your question. According to the Gemara, whose sin?
Avraham's
sin. We'll talk about the pros and cons in a minute. Let's just understand what the Gemara says. Now, the Gemara gives three possible sins. One, because he pressed scholars into his service as it's written, he armed his dedicated servants, in Hebrew, vayarek et chanichav. What's the Gemara saying there? The Gemara saying there is that Avram is guilty because when he went to save his nephew Lot, he gathered up his students to go out to war, and he therefore took Torah scholars away from learning Torah and took them out to war. That is correct. You should recognize this as a political statement, which it is. Okay, born of his own house. Shmuel says, because he went too far in testing the attributes of the Lord, as it says, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit? That when God says to Avraham, your children will inherit the land, Avraham says, Bame eda ki irashena, which we have here, we're going to see it inside in a minute. And Avraham says, well, how do I know that I will inherit? In other words, that sounds like it's questioning God's promise. So therefore, he deserves to be punished. And Rabbi Yochanan says, because he prevented men from entering beneath the wings of the Shekhinah, as it's written, and the king of Sodom said to Avram, give me the persons and take the goods to yourself. What's the Gemara saying? The Gemara is saying here that when he captured Sodom, when he freed Lot, once he captures Sodom from the four kings, he essentially becomes their captive. The Sodom comes out and says, give me the people, you keep the rechush, and Avraham says, you can have it all back. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, why was he returning the souls back to Sodom? He should have kept them in his house and taught them Torah. So the Gemara here gives three possible solutions as to what Avraham's sin was. And just to make the situation even more complex, let's look at source number four. And now I want to remind you that at the very beginning of the semester, the first course, after Sukkot, we talked about how do we view the sin of the Avot. So you might want to take some of that, go back to your notes, and bring that here. But this Ramban in source number four we looked at when we saw that shir, where the Ramban says very clearly, listen, Vida, ki Avram Avinu chata chet gadol bishgaga. Know that Avram Avinu sinned a terrible sin by accident. What was that? Shehavi ishto hatzadeket b'michshul avon mipnei pachado pen yahargohu v'hayalu luftoach v'ashem sheyetzil oto et ishto v'et kol asher lo. The first sin Avram did was the fact that he put Sarah in danger because he was afraid he should have trusted that God would find a way to save him. Ki yesh b'alohim koach lazor latzil. Now listen to the second part of the sentence. Gam yitziato min ha'aretz. God had told him to go lech lecha to the land. There's a famine. He decides to leave. Wait a minute. Why did you decide to leave? God said stay. If God sent you, he'll feed you. What was your idea to leave? So the mere fact that he left the land, shenitztaveh aleha batchila mipnei ha'ra'av avon ashechata. And so know that this was a sin that Avraham did by the fact that he left the land, and then by leaving the land, he put Sarah in danger. So you can even say that that's, you know, two or one connected. God can also, you know, send down man from heaven if necessary. Now listen to the last sentence. Va'al ha-ma'ase hazeh nigzar al zar'o ha-galut be'eres Mitzrayim biyad paro. And because of this, that is why the Jews were condemned to go into exile in Egypt in the hand of Paro. Because that's where he sinned, so that's where the punishment is. Correct. Okay, so here we have three answers in the Gemara, another one in the Ramban. Now let's look back at source number two. Source number two is the Perek of Brit Ben HaBitarim. Okay, so vahi achar dvim ha'ela v'dvar Hashem elavim b'achzeh lemar al tira ava manochi magen lach schacha habei ma'od. And it was after these things. Now what is after these things? What happens in Perek Yudalid? Perek Yudalid is the war of the four kings and the five kings. Remember that. Okay, and Hashem says to Avram, don't be afraid Avram, I will protect you. You have a lot of schar. Vayomar Avram, Hashem Elokim, mati tein li v'anochi halei chariri uven meshik bitzi hu ben hu Who? Damashek Eliezer. So then Avram says to God, okay, fine, but what's going to be with me? I don't have any children. You know, my next of kin at this point is Eliezer. Vayomer Avram, hein li lo natata zera v'hinei ben beiti yoresh oti. And Avram continues, and he says, I don't have any biological child, and here the one who's going to inherit at this point is, you know, my right-hand man. V'hinei devar Hashem elav lemor. And here God says to him, lo yirashcha zeh. He, Eliezer, will not inherit. You're going to have a child who's going to inherit you. God takes him outside. Look to the sky, count the stars. If you can't count the stars, so too are going to be your children. Now, this pasuk is important. And Avram believes in God. And it's not clear who thought who was righteous, Avram or God, or God or Avraham, irrelevant at this point. Here it comes. Ani Hashem asher titichem me'eretz kasdim me'or kasdim l'ted lecha teretz hazot l'rishta. And Hashem said, I am God who took you out from Ur Kasdim to give you this land for inheritance. So here we have a promise of children, and we have promise of the land, what we call Birchat Avraham. Vayomer Hashem Elokim b'me' eda ki irashena. And here's that pasuk that the Gemara quoted as being a problem. Now, what's the problem right away if I tell you that the Gemara is telling you that pasuk chet shows a lack of belief in God? Based on what we've just said, what's the problem with that? Because ten words beforehand, it says v'amin b'Hashem. So it's a little difficult for us as the reader to believe that within 10 seconds here there's been a. And here comes the Brit Bein Abatarim. Vayomelav kachali egla mishuleshet ve'ez mishulet eshet va'ayel mishulat shvitar v'gozel. God commands him to take various animals. Vayikachlo et kol ela vayivatero tam batavech. And Avram takes all of them and he cuts them in the middle. Vayiten ish bitro, and he puts one across the other. Likrat ve'eo ve'tatzipor lo batar, and he doesn't cut the bird. Vayerit ha'ayit al habekarim, and the vulture comes down on the dead pieces. Vayeshev otam Avram, and Avram chases away. There's a tremendous amount to discuss here, but that's not our point. Here comes our point in the next couple of psukim. Vayhi Hashemesh lavo v'tardema nafla al Avram, and the sun is setting, and Avraham a deep sleep falls over Avram. V'hinei ema chashecha gedela nufelet alav, and a sort of panic it takes over Avraham, and Hashem says to Avram, Vayomel Avram, Yado teda ki ger yezarecha be'eretz lo lahem. Know that your sons are going to be strangers in the land that is not theirs. Va'avadum ve'inu otam arba me'ot shana. And they will be enslaved and they will be persecuted for 400 years. Vagamatagoy asher ya'avdun, and to the nation that will enslave them, dan anochi, I will judge them. V'rachechein yetzu b'chush gadol. And then they will leave with much wealth. Va'ata tavo al avotecha b'shalom. And you will die in peace. Tikaber b'seva tova. And you will be dead, buried in a ripe old age. V'dor ravi'i yashuvu hema. And the fourth generation will return to this land after the exile. Kilo shalem avon ha'amori ad hena. Because their sin is not yet complete. Now, having read this chapter here, we understand that this chapter is a fundamental source for the Egyptian exile, because this is where God informs Avraham that his children are going to go down into exile where they will be persecuted. Now, what are the advantages then of the source that we say that Avraham, the punishment, the exile in Egypt is a punishment to Avraham? What do we gain from that explanation?
That we know that it was done with a sin.
Okay, so give that sin concept. What else do we gain here?
That there's a reparation afterwards.
Okay, so when I don't even go there. I just want to say, in terms of what advantage do we have to this, what would force somebody to say that it's Avraham's sin?
I think that great dread that he feels.
Okay, so first of all, now see, here you have two things. That's correct. On one hand, you have this dread that Avram's feeling indicates he's getting some bad nevuah. On the other hand, this is also a chapter that describes the promise of children and land.
Describes his meeting, can you call it, with Kodesh Baruch Hu. Of course there'd be a great dread.
Okay.
It comes, and that
could be why God says to him at the beginning. God says to him at the beginning of the chapter,
yeah,
"Don't be afraid. You have a lot of schar." So, but first of all, so I want to show you what the advantages of this idea is. First of all, the prakim are in order. There's the thing that he meets up with Sodom in Yudalid, and either he takes away the students and he doesn't give back the people, or he says Bameh Eda, and then right after that you have the sin, and then you have the reaction. So in terms of the pshat, this works.
But who else? There's nobody else around. I mean, this is the beginning. So who else would have sinned that would be punished? If not for Avraham.
Yeah, fair. So then you sort of say, right, so it has to be, right, because of God is speaking to Avraham, it seems to be that it therefore has to be it. But now what's the problem with this approach?
I'm still having a problem with the dread being the sin.
Okay, but so even ignore that. You don't even have to go there. But just tell me, what's the problem of saying that the God... One second. Let's take the question.
There was belief.
One second. That's also a problem with that. And what's also the bigger problem?
Because there's so many years that... improved upon it, and
yeah, fair. We're saying that this is a punishment to Avraham.
But Avraham
doesn't go down to Egypt.
No. He's not enslaved.
That's exactly right, which comes back to a whole nother philosophical concept that if you want to bring that up at the table as well. Yafet, okay, we have this whole concept and we spoke about this already. Do children get punished for the sins of their forefathers? And so this approach would very clearly come and say yes they do, and we would ask the question, why does that sin? Also, does the Yafet. No, that's a very important question. She's raising a very important question. She's saying, why is God revealing this prophecy to Avraham?
Now.
So the Gemara answers that question. That's right. That's Yafet.
Yeah,
so that we answer, she understands. Right. So, which brings me to the next question. One second. So you understand that the Gemara answers some questions but raises others. So you want to say, so God is telling it to him so that there should be some sort of tikkun. If that expected, what would we expect when God says to Avram, I'm going to destroy Sodom, what does Avram do?
He pleads with him,
he prays with him. If God is saying to him, I'm going to put your children in exile, I'm going to serve, then they're going to service them, what would you expect Avram to
do?
The children who don't even exist yet, who haven't sinned, what would we expect Avram to do?
Pray
for them.
Please.
Okay, so you see that...
Maybe
okay.
Just in the case, he's the father of the nation, and not necessarily his.
Okay. So you. So that's what I told you. As I said to you at the beginning, these answers, none of them are sufficient, because if they're sufficient, then we wouldn't have an hour's worth of class.
Mm-hmm.
And it also is what gives for discussion. It gives for thought, and it is. But we all understand that this idea of sin, punishment, the order of the chapters, we understand that, but yet it raises a whole bunch of other issues. But just to be fair here, I'd like you to look at source number 5. Source number 5 is the Ma'aseh Hashem, which was written by Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi, and he's a 16th century. He begins in Italy and he moves around. And
what's
his name? Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi. Source 5. Born 1513. He says, how can you even begin to consider that this was a punishment for Avraham? Okay, so he rejects this idea outright, for many of the reasons that you've said here. Va'anachnu inyanenu hara'ot shebamareh bein habitarim she'ne'era Hashem yisparach la'avram ba'ahava u'bechiba. He says this whole chapter, Tedvav, is one of God's feeling close to Avram. He's promising Avram children. He's promising Avram the land. It's ahava v'chiba. No datu mifusemet yiteira al achat kama v'kama tova kfula muhupelet mitchila ad sofa. It shows the love that God has, and your children are going to be like the stars in the sky. God just said to him, you have a lot of reward. And then you're going to tell me in the same chapter, God is coming along and say to him, oh, and by the way, you're being punished? He says, that makes no sense. I didn't bring you the next pasuk. The next pasuk continues after this, And says, and on that day, God made a brit with Avraham. You don't make a brit with somebody
you're angry at.
Ubaofen shekolam arehi haita divrei ahava atzuma. The whole vision comes from a source of love. Va'ol kolda tova mechupelet mufleget umyudat lo zaro. V'hayech yivasela berehazot od ra umar she ibud 400 shana inoy v'lachatz v'ashchalat banim. Okay, he says it can't possibly be. He says it doesn't fit in with the chapter. That's his first explanation. The second explanation he goes on. And he says, as you said, how could it be Yimaru Chayem L'Sibat Chet'o Shebechet Negdo Yitbarach B'Shegam Yivasruhu Bat Salam Sheyasu Lehem Din? He says, by the fact that God says to him he's going to take them out and pay them back would also seem to indicate that if you want to punish somebody, you don't say to them, oh, this is going to be a punishment, and don't worry.
You'll be all right.
That also, right. He says that also doesn't really work for him. He said, and by the way, all those people who suffered in Egypt and got killed in Egypt and their sons got thrown into the river, just because they know that they're eventually going to be taken out, that doesn't make your situation any better. And if the exile was because of Avram's sin, so why don't we find any of the forefathers asking God to get rid of it? Okay, and then he continues the idea. Let's, we're out of time, we're not going to continue reading. Just a little less underlined, because remember, this is something we've seen. Shemishpat Hashem Yisharim, Tzuri V'lo Avlata Bo. Everything God does is just. So how can we understand God punishing Avraham in future generations in Egypt? So we understand that there are advantages to this appointment. We understand that there are disadvantages to this approach. Let's go on to the next one. The next approach is that the sin does not lie with Avraham, but the sin lies with whose sons? Yaakov's sons. That this is a punishment for why?
Because they sold their brother.
For the Mechirat Yosef. Now, the sin then is actually a number. One second, we'll come to that as well. I'll ask for the pros and cons in a minute. What is the advantage? Remember, they plotted to kill Yosef. They threw him into the pit, and they eventually sell him. What is the punishment for somebody who kidnaps?
Isn't it death?
Death, right? The punishment is that a real sin, and with a real punishment, and the enslavement in Egypt would be a punishment for these sons. Now let's talk about the advantage and the disadvantages here. Advantages to this approach.
They did an awful sin.
They did an awful sin. Correct.
You know, and it's immediate. You know, the consequence of it is immediate.
Correct. You sort of see also, they sell Yosef, they come down to Egypt, and they end up staying there. So that you have a consequence as a result of their sins, and so that's an advantage to this idea.
It's also very powerful because it isn't one person sinning, it's a group getting together and talking it over and then deciding, yes, this is something that we're going to do.
So that they're
so
all...
therefore, the people merited it more than if just one person.
Right, as opposed to just one person sinning and everybody suffering. Here's the collective group, so the collective is getting punished.
And the collective that's getting punished are the people who sin.
Are they really, though?
No.
No, they've been good like it. It's their descendants.
Correct. So you're back to your problem.
Okay.
Okay? So those are the... So we have one of the disadvantages to this approach.
It's not...
So again, it's not that generation.
Yosef said it's all forgiven.
Yosef forgives them.
As far as we understand, they did tshuva.
They did tshuva.
Can Yosef saying, I forgive you, be enough for this type of sin before Hashem?
No, but just a minute. If you do that, you take away the idea that we can do tshuva.
Okay. So let's look at source number six. Source number six is the Abarbanel here. The Abarbanel here says, after he rejects that it was Avram, he says it makes more sense that the sin here is Bnei Yaakov. As opposed to Avram, we were sort of like, well, maybe this is a sin, reading into the sin. The sons of Avram, clearly, it's Bnei Yaakov, clearly about themselves, say, Aval Hashem im anachnu. So we know clearly that there is a great sin, because they hated their brother, and the fact that they decided together that they wanted to kill him, he was just coming to find out, you know, if they're okay. And they threw him into the pit, and they specifically sold him to Egypt. Now the Ramban raises an interesting idea, which I thought maybe some of you might think of. V'im heyot sheru uvein lo hayta b'michira. Wait a minute, if you want to tell me that this is a punishment for the brothers, Uvein should not be punished. Who else should not be punished? Binyamin should not be punished, and Yosef. Okay, so that's a hole in this logic. So the Ramban continues here, and he says that actually Reuven is also guilty because they'd obviously, this is a feeling that had been, you know, brought up from the brothers. This wasn't overnight, so Reuven must have been part of it. He says Yosef is guilty because, and we talked about this when we did Yosef, why is Yosef guilty? Because he was arrogant, and he claims the thing. Yaakov is guilty because he favored Yosef, and Binyamin, so the Abarbanel sort of says that once you're punishing the collective, you might as well, you know. We're going to get to that. 1 second, that's the next thing. Okay? 1 second, we'll get to that in a minute. So that we understand here, and you should just know, by the way, that Rav Yitzchak Arama, the Akedat Yitzchak, views this fact about Binyamin as the fatal flaw to this approach. He says, otherwise, this approach might be good, but because of this Binyamin twist, he says, I cannot accept it. But even as you pointed out, even if we do want to accept it, and we do understand that, like it makes sense to us because it was a great sin, and even though Yosef forgave them, God is still saying this is not okay. It wasn't the generation of the actual sinners. Their life in Egypt was
super,
yeah. They were not. They were not punished. And again, the children are continuing.
Can you repeat why Reuven should not be?
Because Reuven also apparently no. That apparently Reuven, this was not something that they overnight all of a sudden saw him coming and decide to kill him. This was obviously something that had been brewing among the people, right? And he too must have. And the whole reason, he saves Yosef is not because he really thought that was the wrong thing to do. He was afraid what would he tell his father. So he, that's right. Okay. So this is also, the advantage to this is explains why Egypt. Mm-hmm. There's also another problem. If this indeed the sons of Yosef, the brothers of Yosef, that goes back to Perek Tedvav, then God is already telling Avraham that your children are going to be slaves in a land that is not theirs before
it
has happened.
But God can do that.
God can do that. Correct. That, well, no, it's clearly that that's not an answer here. That is clearly not an answer here, but it is true that you can say, well, God can predict anything. Okay, fine. Answer number three to this section, that we're saying that the exile is the punishment. We said it was a punishment to Avraham. We said it's a punishment to Bnei Yosef. The third answer is that it actually is not a punishment to them, but it's actually a punishment to the Jews themselves in Egypt. The Jews went down to Egypt and life could have been very well there. That could have been considered their exile and it could have been a very positive exile. But what happens as the Jews are in Egypt? As they are in Egypt, they begin to sin. As we can call it whatever sin you want, and we're going to see a number of them. And we see this in the Radak on source 7. Radak here says, V'ha'avodah hazot v'ha'inoy. He's talking about it in Perek Tedvav in Bereishit. This persecution that the Jews are going to experience, haya onesh ma'asehem. It's a punishment of the actions of the Jews who were living in Egypt. Shechatu b'Mitzrayim. They sinned when they lived in Egypt. Kimoshe ne'emar b'nevuat Yechezkel. Now let's just skip down to source number 8, which is the pasuk in Yechezkel, which also you can do a tremendous amount with this pasuk at your Seder. The pasuk says, "Vayimru bi," and they rebelled against me, "velo avu lishmoa elai," and they didn't choose to listen to me, "ish et shikutzei einehem lo hishlichu vet gilulei Mitzrayim lo azavu." They did not leave away the things that were disgusting in my eyes, and they did not stay away from the avodah zarah of Egypt. The omar lishpoch hamati alehem lichlot api bahem betoch eretz Mitzrayim, and I almost desired to wipe them out while they were in Egypt. Yafeh.
But it's the first time I'm hearing of it.
That's why we come to class. So you went to Pete, went stay with me a minute.
Since they kept their clothes.
One second. This is how they're lot. Okay, slowly. As I told you, this is. Let's take this information. So here, the one second. So the first thing Radak is telling us here is Radak is saying to us that the reason they are suffering in Egypt has nothing to do with Avram's sin or Yosef's sin. It has to do with the Jews' sin and their sin. And specifically, he refers to the sin of Avodah Zarah in Mitzrayim. Now, you are saying that you don't know about Avodah Zarah in Mitzrayim, but you do. So let me show you how you do. Let me remind you. First of all, you remember that there is this concept that the Jews were on the 49th level of Tumah. One of the reasons they were specifically commanded to take the Karban Pesach was to
Davka,
to get rid of this. And you're more there. You know the Medrash that when Bnei Yisrael were at the Yam Suf, and the angels turn to God and they say to God, "Halalu Ovdei Avodah Zarah, v'halalu Ovdei Avodah." The Egyptians are idol worshippers and the Jews are idol worshippers. Why should we save them and kill them? So we do have it, right? But we do have it in other. We do have it in other places. Now I'm going to take the pros and cons in a minute, but let me just show you that there are other sins that they are blamed with. Yechezkel blames them specifically with Avodah Zarah. The other sins that are blamed, look at source 17. Source 17 is the Shmot Rabbah. The Shmot Rabbah tells us, "Lilamedcha, kishemet Yosef, heferu brit milah," but not because it was dangerous or not because, "amru nihye ki Mitzrayim." וכיוון שעשו כך, הפך הקדוש ברוך הוא אהבה שהיו מצרים אוהבים אותן לשנאה. And therefore God changed the, they wanted to assimilate into the Egyptian society by not doing a Brit Milah, and therefore God changes the way the Egyptians are treating them, and therefore the next thing is throw the Jewish uncircumcised boys into the Yam.
That answers your question from the
beginning. Come on. Come on to the next one. Look at source 18. Source 18 says, when it says, "Vatimalei ha'aretz otam," right? They want to get rid of the Jews because the earth is filled with them. "Nitmalu batei tiatronot ubatei kirkisaot mehem." That the Jews left their ghetto and moved and became to the theaters and came to the circuses. In other words, they were assimilating into the land of Egypt, and that is what begins their sin. Taking this just a little bit further, let's look at source 19, which is the Netziv. Now, when did the Netziv live?
1900.
In the early 1900s. From where? Where did he live? Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. That's his name. Netziv stands for Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. Listen what he says. Vatzimalei ha'aretz otam. Mahem ha'beya v'chein. We'll just skip that. Aval lashon ha'mikra mikra otam. Ba'al lamed. Dilo eretz goshen levad. Shehayu meluchad liYisrael. In other words, they didn't say in their ghetto in Eretz Goshen. Umala miYisrael levad, and the land became full of Jews. Ella afilu kol shaya ikar yeshivat im Mitzrayim mikol makom malei haaretz et Yisrael mashmuut otam imam ma shekutuv b'sefer vayikra v'izbchu zivchei shlamim l'Hashem otam v'yakom makom panoi shematzu Yisrael liknot uledor nityashvu shama, that wherever they found an empty house. Now prove to me this is true. Prove to me from something you know that the Jews did not live only in Eretz Goshen.
Because they had to put the thing on.
Yafeh. They had to put blood on the doorscope, and God had to pasach al hadlatot. If they all lived together in Goshen, then there wouldn't be a need for to identify which home was Jewish. The fact that they had to put blood on the doors, and there's this idea that God passed over some houses and not others, indicated that indeed.
I understand what God would need to know.
Anyway. That's a different story. All right.
The neighbors, the Egyptian neighbors were also giving them their children.
Right. We have all. But the point that I want to make here is the fact that the Nitziv is saying, we know, and I don't know how many of us actually integrated that point, that the Jews had left their ghetto and had assimilated into the land of Egypt. V'haya dichtiv b'makat b'chorot u'pasach Hashem al petach haresha yuharbei b'nei Yisrael b'kerev b'tei Mitzrayim.
So when they found an empty house, they went to live in it?
That's what it sounds like. And maybe they bought it. It sounds like they bought it. There was a point where they still had money before they became slaves. Ubaha katuv lakdim bazeh sibat sinat Mitzrayim gezeirot hamachut. And that's why when it says v'talemtimaleha aretz otam, that comes to explain why all of a sudden did the Egyptians at one point love the Jews and then all of a sudden start to hate them. Umachshevet chashad mashalo Allah al dat Yisrael. V'chol ze ba. Why did all this come? Mishum shebetzu latzeit meretzon Yaakov avim sheyishvu dafka be'eretz Goshen. All of their problems began from the fact that they left the ghetto walls. Yafeh. Kedei sheyeh badad v'nifdal mitzrayim k'ma shekutuv b'parashat vayigash. Yaakov's plan was to keep them separated, and the Jews decided to change. Aval heim lo ratzu kein. Okay, and you get the idea, and of course you understand why the Nitziv would say what he says, and that the idea is when you leave, this is not even necessarily a punishment, but this also becomes the natural outcome. When the Jews try to become too much like their hosting nation, the hosting nation turns at them and says, no, you're not.
Well, this is the whole reason why it's coming from the Nazis.
Correct.
The whole have masculine.
Correct. Correct.
Did anyone go to Herzl and hear of Summit's approach on this? It was beautiful. I mean, he hit against America on that one. He said, why didn't they go back? Because if you read what they say about the Kohanim of Egypt, he said, don't look at that as Kohanim of Egypt. Look at that as the Yehudim of Egypt. Because everyone else had to give over all their property,
right,
and everything, and Yosef protected them. So they had a good life.
Okay. So now, what's the advantage and the disadvantage to this approach?
That the people who did the sin, yes, are the people who are paying.
Right. So that in terms of, right, in terms of philosophy, that we such much better with us, you sin, you get punished, or that's even the direct result of their actions, that works for us.
But
what is the problem with this approach?
About it from before. They can turn around and say we're actually doing God's work.
Right. So that approach, so again, this doesn't necessarily answer about why God sells this to, it's preordained.
And it also presupposes that we view exile as a punishment. And not as an,
we're going to get to that in 2 seconds. In 2 seconds. Okay? So, but then we also have to ask a very important question, a fundamental question that asks on this question. If this is true, and this is where the Jews have become, by what merit do they deserve to be redeemed?
That's the merit of Avraham.
So then again, well, you can't have it both ways.
That's what I'm saying.
If you, right? Zechut avot. So you can use that. Or if you go back to Yechezkel, I think he answers that. The pasuk in Yechezkel says, go back to source 8, pasuk tet, ve'e'as lema'an shemi lebilti hechel le'enei hagoyim. There's a concept that God takes us out of Egypt not because we deserve it, but because of the chilul Hashem that occurs in exile and for his name. Okay, so that is the first approach. I think that's...
I think
So let's get to that. Let's go to approach number two. You're bringing us right into approach number two. So approach number one, again, was sin, whether it's the sin of Avram, sin of Bnei Yosef, sin of Bnei Yaakov. Oh, let me just tell you one more thing about sin of Bnei Yaakov. Sin of Bnei Israel. There's also a concept that you know. When Moshe Rabbeinu kills the Egypt, the Egyptian, and then he says, I have to run away. Yeah. Why does he have to run away? Because he's afraid that somebody's going to tattletale on him. And you have that in source number 9. Source number 9 is the Tanchuma. It starts at the bottom page. Vayera Moshe vayomer achen noda hadavar amar lehem yesh beinechem lashon hara. Okay, so we have a whole bunch of. There's also something called the Damascus scroll, which was dug up in the Qumran. In the Damascus scroll, it says that the Jews were eating blood. Okay, in other words, I'm just showing you there are a whole bunch of different opinions. Whatever way you get it, I still think you have this idea that it was a sin of the Jews. Approach number two. Approach number two is that this was not a sin of the Jews, but rather the Egyptian exile had some sort of educational message to teach the Jews, to inculcate certain values, to inculcate faith, and that the purpose of being Egypt, there was a building experience. So we'll get to that in a second. So the first idea is, so what was it that they were supposed to learn? And if you look at source number 10, source number 10 says, Minayin ata omer shelo yodu avoten Mitzrayim. How do we know that our forefathers go down to Egypt? Ela kedei she'asu lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu nisim ugvorot. The whole reason for them to go down was so that they could experience the miracles of the redemption, bishvil lekadesh et shmo hagadol be'olam, in order to make God's name great in the world. And we know this from Yitro, we know it from Rachav, we know it from other situations where they say, we heard about the miracles that God made in Egypt. Shene'emar v'hi b'yamim harabim ahem v'yamat melech Mitzrayim v'omar v'yishma Elohim et nakatam v'yizke Elohim et brito v'yom kishem Hashem ekra havu godel le'loheinu. Uminayin shelo hevi hamakom praniut v'lo hevi esamakot al paro v'amitzrayim ela b'shvil l'kadesh et shmo hagadol be'olam shemetchila ha'inyan hu omer מי השם אשר ישמע בקולו ובסוף עניין הוא אומר השם הצדיק ואני ועמי הרשעים. The Sifri is saying the whole way to understand the Egyptian exile was a way of to make God's name great in the world, to spread the concept of monotheism, of there is one God who controls all of nature. And we have a very good example from Egypt. Egypt, remember, is the complete antithesis of this, and that's why they're put specifically in Egypt. And at the beginning, Paro says, who is God? And by the end, Paro has said, Hinei Hashem HaTzadik Vani Vami HaRishayim. So that we understand here for a minute the larger picture, so to speak, of the Egyptian exile. But what is the problem with this approach?
Why was it necessary at that point? Well, using Bnei Israel, yes,
can't the merciful God find another way to spread this monotheism without the suffering and the okay? Yeah.
Suffering is essential.
I just would like to back a half a step and say that the if that's the case, that it's a learning experience for the world. That's very similar to Achrit Hayamim, that the world is supposed
as we said, and we're going to come back to this again, that the Egyptian exile has to be a mirror for future, when the whole world will come to a recognition of God. And this, of course, what makes Amalek so evil, because they were the ones who refused it. So many of these ideas are concepts that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea continues with this. Not only is it an educational experience, but we would call it Yisurin Shel Ahava, we call it in Hebrew, which means afflictions of love.
Yeah,
that there's the desire to raise the level of the Jewish people, as opposed to answer one that the purpose was the entire world. Here we're saying the purpose is not to educate the entire world, but to educate the Jewish people, to bring them closer to God and prepare them receiving of the Torah and of Eretz Yisrael, which we have in Source 11. Vayishlchuhu me'emek Chevron. Now think about when this Emek Chevron is already before Yosef has even gone out to his brothers. V'chi emek yesh l'chevron halo hi bahar. But don't we know that Chevron is a mountain, not a valley? Ela l'hashlim ha'itzah ha'amuka shenatan HaKadosh Baruch Hu beino ulvein ha'tzadik ha'yoshev b'chevron. The Medrash says because God has to fulfill that promise that he had made to the tzadik who is buried in Chevron, shehayu abadum v'inu otam arba me'ot shana. God had told Abram that they're going to be persecuted for 400 years. V'inyan hadavar, and you know the reason for this persecution, shelo gazar alavoteinu lahishtabed m'mitzrayim, the whole reason they were put into Mitzrayim, ela sheyichnu'u l'kabel ha'torah v'hamitzvah shahad. This midrash seems to say that this was part of the selection process, that part of the selection process in order to prepare them for the Torah receiving is having to go through this exile experience. And God revealed this to him in advance. And this is the depth of the promise. So that according to this opinion, it's an educational experience for Bnei Yisrael specifically. It's part of their preparation for the accepting of Torah. And you have this also in Source 12. Because remember, why did he get the Nevuah? Because Avram had said, how do I know that they will inherit? And so God is telling him, they will inherit as a result of the suffering that they have. That is a guarantee that they will be ready to receive the Torah. Ki mikan zachu banav lema 12. Ki mikan zachu banav lema alata Torah v'kahuna v'hamalchut. The Tzrar Hamor says, which is Avram ben Yaakov, Saba, says that the whole experience was to prepare them to receive the Torah. V'im lo yodu Mitzrayim, shenitnasu sham bekor harbarzel, lo hayu ulim l'chol elu hama'alot. And they, now that term, Kor HaBarzel, takes us into like the next explanation. In what way is it a preparation for them? Kor HaBarzel is where you put your silver into in order to get rid of all the refine, to get rid of the impurification, the smelting. And so this is the idea that suffering here is not as a result of sin, but that suffering comes as a purification process in order to prepare them for the ultimate receiving of Torah, becoming God's chosen people, and entering the land. And therefore you have this also in the Abarbanel, which is Source 13. V'im ne'amar shehaya galut Mitzrayim gazur mifnad yitbarach lo atzad ha'onesh. He says, so understand here that the Egyptian exile is not a punishment, it obviously has another purpose, that God somehow decided from his great intelligence that this needs to be done. That the Jews have a special mission in this life, in this world. They have to be God's people. They have to be the ones who live in the land. And therefore, they need to go through this process in order to purify them. I guess you could compare it to somebody who needs to go through some difficult medical process in order to receive, to get rid of a tumor that's inside them, and after them they will be healthy and be able to continue. And so this is the approach of the Abarbanel, this is the approach of the Midrash, that we shouldn't look at it in any way, and this goes back to our Parah Aduma concept, that it's difficult for us to wrap our heads around, that there is suffering without sin. The advantages, as we said, to this, we understand. That explains why them, explains why the story, explains why he comes to Abraham. The problem with this approach...
There could have been a more gentle
right.
way.
It's hard. Right. It's hard for us. Right. It's hard for us to accept. It's hard for us to accept that idea. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Tough love.
Right. That's the same. We'll draw that out. Okay. It is. It is that idea of as you say, tough love. The idea here then is why specifically Egypt. Why Egypt?
Because Mitzrayim
was the center of the culture at the time.
Sorry.
Okay, but again, this, as opposed to some of those other answers, that it was very clear why Egypt, this doesn't necessarily explain to us the Egypt aspect. Now, Nachama Leibowitz here has a very, very interesting idea. Nachama here in Source 4, the purpose of the Egyptian exile and the suffering comes back. If you look at so many places in the Torah, it says, don't do this because... You were slaves in Egypt. Be nice to the ger because you were strangers there. Be good to the what?
Social justice theory.
Okay, so this is it's a social justice. Rest because you know what it means not to rest. Teach your treat your slaves kindly because you know what it means to be slaves. It's always listening. So Nachama here is saying that the experience of the exile and slavery is not so much that they should, you know, sing God's name to the world, but rather so that they should learn the empathy to care for the downtrodden, to take care of those less fortunate, and that should be what builds you as a nation. That you as a nation should establish, having experienced that, you should know better. Right. These things are not necessarily separate.
That's actually a basis for Milton Erickson's hypnotherapy, where if you imagine it in your mind, it's already in your being, and then you can go ahead and
right.
do it.
Now, taking this same idea a little bit in a different direction, Hirsch here explains that what happened is, he says, there was no way for them to have formed into a nation had they stayed in the land of Canaan. What would have happened had they stayed in the land of Canaan? Already then, they were beginning to marry in to the Benot Canaan. We see this very clearly from Yehuda. And the other question is, who did the other brothers marry?
We don't have an idea.
Okay, so that's a concept. So here, Rav Hirsch says that they had to be taken out, being put into this place where they don't want to intermarry with you, they don't want to assimilate with you, they wouldn't even eat bread with you, let alone they're going to intermarry with you. And this was the way to form them into a nation, a caring nation, perhaps if you put it together with Nachama Leibowitz, and this is the point of the Egyptian exile, according to Rev Hirsch. And let's just take a look. Well, I'm going to skip the Hirsch because it's long, but just to see it inside in the Sfarno in Source 16, he says the same idea. Anochi ha'el Elohei avicha. This is what God says to Yaakov when he's going down. Anihu shamarti la'avicha al teved Mitzrayim. God says, I told Yitzchak not to go down. Anihu hashomer elecha al tira meredem Mitzrayim. But I'm the same God who told him not to go. I'm telling you to go. Va'ata zekoi legol gadol asimecha sham. And why should you not be afraid to go down to Egypt? Because there you will be made into a great nation. Ki amnam im yet hayu banecha yoshvim po, because if your sons were to stay here in Canaan, hayu mitchatnim b'kna'anim umitarvim imam, you would have become part of the local population. Aval b'mitzrayim lo yikre zeh, ki lo yuchlun ha-mitzrayim lechol et ha-ivim lechem, because the Egyptians will not eat bread with the Jews, v'chein yeh l'goy gadol nivdal, ke'amram ha-rabbeinu zechoram l'vracha, v'yu sham l'goy gadol, milameit shahyu mitzuyanim sham. Now this obviously goes against what we just said about them assimilate. Okay, but whatever. But some did, some didn't. And of course, I want to throw out, you remember this idea of Makat Choshech, that 4/5 of the Jews did not come out. So this helps you to make ideas here as well. Go ahead.
To go inside.
This has happened throughout. You had to be outside of Israel. And remember, Torah was given outside of Israel. The nation became formed in order to come in order to rebuild. To rebuild the nation. It's a very interesting idea to think about. So that the idea here is this educational to teach monotheism to the world, to purify the Jews, to prepare them to be a nation, both in terms of social justice and in terms of a cohesive unit, in order to be able to have them to return. What's it now? We're going to take a look at what?
No, the approach of sin and its reasons, and the approach of education.
That's right. And now you will look at the Nitziv. Also, again here, I brought you another Nitziv. I brought you another Nitziv here in source 19. We're again here the Nitziv.
We did that one already.
Okay, fine. Let's just look at source. Let's look at 20, and that will be our third explanation.
Third approach.
Okay. Third approach is the approach of the Rambam here, where basically the answer is we don't know.
That goes back to
what we started with. Let's look at the Rambam. Rambam says in Hilchot Tshuvah, because he's asking about whether you have free will, which also was a fantastic discussion at your table. What role does free will play? Did the Egyptians have free will? God said they will enslave them and they will persecute them. So why in the world do the Egyptians deserve to be punished? God commanded them to do it. It's just the same way. God predicts that the Jews are going to do bad things. Didn't God say that they're going to worship Avodah Zarah? So why does God come and punish them? God didn't say, notice very carefully, God says they're going to be slaves in a land that is not theirs. God didn't say which nation. God also says the Jews are going to worship Avodah Zarah as a group. He doesn't say which individual is going to go out and worship Avodah Zarah. If you didn't want to, you would not fall there. And this is something you need to understand about how the world works. What is this like? It's as if you said to a group, they're going to be good people and they're going to be bad people. So the bad person can't get up and say, it's been preordained that I'm going to be evil. But that can't be his argument. Right? Says you have to get stuck up because there's going to be no evyon. Every one of those Egyptians who was evil to the Jews, each one had his own choice. It wasn't specific that this man, God only said he's going to be exiled on land that's not theirs. And God can say whatever it is that he wants. So where is this answer going? This answer is also going to say that the Jews ended up in Egypt. Egypt, they could have spent the 400 years there in exile, but could have been what we call a good exile. Why? How come it turns into a bad exile? Not because it was a punishment, not because it needed to be an educational experience, but because the Egyptians took their free will and used it and enslaved the Jews. That is a different idea altogether. So the last point that I want to make is that
that doesn't sit well.
Maybe because
Hashem could have made
That's right, but we know that God doesn't necessarily get involved like
maybe
that.
Maybe the comparison between Egypt and the Jewish people and the experience of Egypt, and it's rigid and it doesn't move and it's geometric and it's a society that hasn't been tested because the Nile rises
right.
every year, and the Jews are constantly being thrown
right.
around.
So then I think, right, so I think the last idea, though, to throw out here is now, so think how many ideas that you've raised here for a discussion. We've raised discussion, is there punishment without sin? What is the role of free will? Does God punish children for the sins of their fathers? Is there a concept of collective punishment? But I think the real, most fascinating discussion you'll have at your table is to ask now, how do we view the Egyptian exile as a mirror for all future exiles? And what role does exile play throughout the generations, and how we should look at what we even today, our experience, and what are the lessons that we are to learn from that comparison?